This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
There are many on the GNA side who want to continue the fight. On the other side, the LNA certainly intends to take Tripoli before any kind of political solution can take place.
That's Wolfgang Poshtai, security analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations. Details coming up also. We ask if the brazen attack on U.S. forces in Kenya recently indicates al-Shabaab's new strength. And Egypt is blaming Ethiopia for the failure of the latest round of talks on the construction of a controversial Nile Dam. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab militant group on Sunday attacked Kenya's Manda Bay airfield, a military base that houses U.S. and Kenyan troops. They destroyed U.S. equipment, including aircraft and vehicles, and most of all, they killed three American Department of Defense personnel. It's the first time that Al-Shabaab has carried out an attack against U.S. forces in Kenya. To brief us on the matter, we have on the phone line Jeff Selden, VOA's Intelligence and National Security Correspondent. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Glad to be here.
Jeff, a Kenyan military spokesman has said five of the attackers were killed. Still, this brazen attack on U.S. forces in Kenya indicates al-Shabaab's new strength. Are we looking at a resurgence to the point where the group is stepping up its tactics and selecting high-profile targets?
Look, al-Shabaab has been carrying out a series of attacks, seemingly more and more high-profile, more and more ambitious, over the last several months. But it's part of a larger trend that U.S. intelligence and military officials are looking at in Africa and very much concerned about, not just al-Shabaab, but also other al-Qaeda affiliates, other Islamic State affiliates have been showing more and more prowess, more and more they're exerting control over parts of the countries in which they operate. So it's become more of a focus and more of a concern for the U.S. military about what is happening and how they can combat that. Now, also, this is not the first time that the U.S. has had some problems with security of its own forces in Africa. Remember, back in October 2017, there was a patrol in Niger that was ambushed by an Islamic State-linked terror group, which killed four Americans and several Nigerian soldiers as well. So there's an ongoing concern about not just the ability of groups like al-Shabaab, but also whether or not the U.S. footprint is providing adequate security for its forces on the continent.
And these airstrikes by the U.S. In Somalia, have they worked? Like in 2019, American planes carried out, 52 attacks on the militants in the war-torn country. However, still al-Shabaab holds its territory and seems to remain strong.
One of the difficulties with airstrikes, with drone strikes, is that while the U.S. is able to use the drones to get good intelligence, often they are hitting sometimes just one or two fighters at a time with al-Shabaab. But what they found elsewhere in other parts of the world, too, is that these terror groups like al-Shabaab have proven to be very resilient. And while you may be able to take out some fighters, you may be able to kill some prominent leaders, there are always more people in the pipeline ready to stand up and carry out the group's operations. And so that's been part of the problem. Has al-Shabaab's capacity in some ways been diminished? Most military and intelligence officials will tell you yes, but at the same time, they found ways to get around that and build back up their strength, which again is one of the enduring concerns for the U.S. Remember, just about a month ago or two, there was a big conference. It was focused on Islamic State that was hosted in the United States at the State Department, and they said that the next part of the world that they were looking at, they were starting to look beyond Iraq and Syria, where the fight against ISIS was held, but they were saying the next big concern, the next area that the world and the anti-ISIS coalition has to focus on in terms of jihadist groups has got to be Africa, because that's where the growing threat is.
And Jeff, the part the Somali government is playing, you know, backed by the African Union and Turkish troops, the Somali army has liberated key towns from militants, but the group sometimes retakes those towns immediately afterwards because of the government's inability to securely govern them.
Exactly. And one of the difficulties is that the U.S., look, the U.S. military officials have told me in the past that if there are some bad guys out there, some jihadists, a group like Al-Shabaab, a group like Islamic State, send the U.S. military in, and within a couple of months, the group can be eradicated. But once the U.S. military leaves, within another few, 4 or 5 months, 6 months, the group will be back at full strength. That's been a pattern throughout the world, and it's a difficult one because a lot of times these groups like Al-Shabaab take advantage of fragile states, places where there may be a government, but it is unable to exercise full control over all of its territory. And these groups have become very, very skilled at using that situation, that instability to their advantage, and are able to put down roots sometimes by providing services governments are unable to provide. And that gives them an ability to operate with the local population because they establish some trust. It's become a very difficult situation, and the challenge facing the U.S. military now is how to proceed. There's been a lot of talk from the Washington about pulling U.S. troops from the region, about focusing more on places like Asia and the great power competition, as military officials like to talk about it, with China. But are they going to be able to balance that out with the counterterrorism needs that are emerging and the counterterrorism threat that is getting stronger in Africa, in places like Somalia?
Jeff Seldon, VOA's intelligence and national security correspondent, thank you for your input.
Anytime.
Suspected Islamist militants launched an attack on an army base yesterday that the Niger government says left at least 25 soldiers and 63 assailants dead. It was the latest in a surge of deadly ambushes of military outposts and towns in the increasingly dangerous Sahel region. The Niger government followed by announcing a new military offensive, saying the defensive strategy hasn't worked. The latest attack came near the border with Mali. No one claimed responsibility, but the strategy was similar to other recent attacks, with a large number of assailants swarming a military base on motorcycles and cars. A raid last month killed 71 Nigerian soldiers. Leaders of the Sahel will be meeting in France on Monday to map out a new strategy. Security has deteriorated this year across the Sahel, a semi-arid strip of land beneath the Sahara, amid jihadist attacks and the deadly ethnic reprisals between rival farming and herding communities. The UN Human Rights Office accuses members of the Lendu community in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Ituri province of mass violations against the Hema community, which could constitute crimes against humanity. Inter-ethnic tensions between the Lendu and Hema communities over land and other resources have gone on for decades, but the UN Human Rights Office reports that from December 2017 to September 2019, more than 700 people have been killed in the regions Jugu and Magi, the DRC's Ituri province. In addition, 168 were injured and at least 143 people sexually assaulted. UN Human Rights spokesman Rupert Colville tells reporter Lisa Schlein most of the perpetrators are Lendu and most of the victims are Hema. He says the violence could contain some elements of crimes against humanity through murder, torture, rape, other forms of sexual violence, pillaging, and persecution. The report says the barbarity of the attacks indicates the attackers want to force Hema communities to flee and not return to their homes. The UN Human Rights Office recommends DRC authorities address the causes of the Lendu-Hema conflict. It is urging the authorities to conduct an independent and impartial investigation into the violence and to compensate the victims. Russia and Turkey had called for a ceasefire in Libya to start Sunday following a meeting between the two countries' presidents. National Libyan Army Commander Khalifa Haftar late Thursday rejected calls for a ceasefire and announced a continuation of his military operations against a UN-recognized government, while Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj declared his support for the Berlin-Libya conference, seeking a ceasefire, a weapons embargo, and a political process in the country under the leadership of the UN's National Libyan Army. Statement said, no political settlement is possible before disbanding and disarming all militias. Experts expect more complications in the Libyan situation. VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi discussed the latest developments in Libya with Wolfgang Poshtai, security analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations.
This shows that Russia simply doesn't have the influence to force the LNA to a ceasefire. Contrary to what many people in the West believe. The LNA believes that they are on the road to victory. They believe that they can take Tripoli in the next couple of weeks, and therefore they do not agree to a ceasefire. Furthermore, they fear that if the pro-GNA militias are allowed to get a break right now with a ceasefire, that Turkey could use this break to build up its strength in Libya without being hindered by the Libyan National Army. And they are scared that thereafter it could start all over again with very negative consequences for the Libyan National Army. And this is why they reject it. We need to be aware that on the other side, Turkey has a huge influence on many, but not on all on the GNA side. I doubt that the hardliners among the pro-GNA would have accepted such a ceasefire if Haftar would not have rejected already. We need to keep in mind that they recently lost the key city of Sirte, and therefore they lost their gateway, their access to the oil crescent, to the strategic important oil crescent. And the hardliners hope that with the help of Turkish reinforcements, they could be able to start a major counter-offensive soon and defeat the LNA. But maybe most important, this underlines that Russia does not have the huge influence on the LNA as it is claimed by the GNA, some Western analysts, and in particular by some American analysts.
But while the head of GNA, Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj, declared his support for the Berlin-Libya conference, seeking a ceasefire, a weapons embargo, and a political process in the country under the leadership of the United Nations, the LNA statement said no political settlement is possible before disbanding and disarming all militias. What do you make of that?
Fayez al-Sarraj is certainly an honest man, but I doubt that he has the power and the influence to negotiate on behalf of the whole Operation Volcano pro-GNA militia and army coalition. On Wednesday, he was on the way to Rome on the flight back from Brussels. He should have met the Italian Prime Minister Conte and Marshal Haftar in Rome to discuss about the ceasefire. He was already in the approach to Rome, and when the Misrata learned and others learned about his intention, he was forced to fly directly back to Tripoli and skip the meeting in Rome. So, as said, there are many on the GNA side who want to continue the fight. On the other side, the LNA certainly intends to take Tripoli before any kind of political solution can take place. Therefore, they are right now speeding up the military operations on the ground. And at the same time, they are bombarding Misrata and Tripoli airport in order to slow down the arrival of support and reinforcements from Turkey. For the LNA, this is a race against time. They need to take Tripoli from their point of view before the defenders are strong enough to overwhelm them. Haftar has announced that thereafter, the internationally recognized parliament, the House of Representatives, should appoint a new interim government to prepare for elections. But we will see if he takes Tripoli, if he keeps his word.
German Foreign Minister said there is a desire to prevent Libya from becoming the scene of a proxy war, warning that Libya cannot be allowed to become another Syria. Could Germany succeed in holding a Libya conference that has the support of all parties but General Haftar?
There is certainly a danger that Libya could become a second Syria. But the Libya conference, without all the key players from the GNA side and from the LNA side, doesn't really make sense. And I doubt that Egypt and the UAE, the key supporters of the Libyan National Army, are willing to participate in such a conference if the GNA is allowed to sit on the table, but no one from the LNA. So for Egypt, the LNA is a key tool to pursue their strategic interests with regard to Libya. This means to prevent Libya from becoming an Islamist state or even breaking up. So from their point of view, a meeting without LNA but with GNA is not a possibility.
That was Wolfgang Poschtei, security analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations, talking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shinawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 5580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Suspected Islamist militants launched an attack on an army base in Niger, killing 25 soldiers. The UN Human Rights Office accuses members of the Lendu community in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ituri province, of committing crimes against humanity. And Russia and Turkey call for a ceasefire in Libya to start as early as Sunday. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Egypt is blaming Ethiopia for the failure of the latest round of talks on the construction of a controversial Nile Dam. The $4.6 billion grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam on the Blue Nile, which is around 70% complete, promises to provide much-needed electricity to Ethiopia's 100 million people. It has been a contentious point among Ethiopia, Sudan, and Egypt, the three main Nile Basin countries. According to the Associated Press on Thursday, officials from the three countries concluded a two-day meeting in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa without reaching an agreement on the technical issues related to the dam's construction. Cairo's main aim is to ensure that the dam will not affect Egypt's water supply, especially in times of drought. Egypt fears the project, set to be Africa's largest hydraulic dam, could reduce its share of the Nile, a lifeline for Egypt's 100 million people. On the other hand, Ethiopia denies the dam will undermine Egypt's access to water and says the project is crucial to its economic development as it aims to become Africa's biggest power exporter with a projected capacity of more than 6,000 megawatts. Uganda has been placed on high alert as locust infestations continue to ravage its neighbors. The infestations have been reported in Ethiopia, Kenya, Sudan, and Somalia, among other countries. Districts in Uganda's eastern region, which borders Kenya, have been urged to look out for any strange grasshopper-like insects in their areas. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
With locusts detected in the Kenyan counties of Mandera, Masabiti, Wajiru, Garissa, Meru, and Isiolo, there is fear that swarms might spread into Uganda very soon. Agre Bajiri is Uganda's Minister of State for Agriculture.
Due to the security situation in Somalia and northern eastern Kenya, that's Mandera and Garissa counties, and other factors, there are still large locust farms observed from Somalia and Ethiopia, with further separate inside Kenya. Since the current control capacity is limited, some of the swarms could move further western into Turkana County, probably by mid-January, with likely potential risk that some swarms could spill over into northern eastern region of Uganda, particularly Karamoja regions, that borders Turkana County in Kenya.
Bajire says Uganda needs about $1.4 million to spray insecticides should there be an invasion. Locust swarms can consume vast amounts of crops and grassland, leaving farmers impoverished.
The minister has communicated the office of the prime minister on the imminent locust invasions and requested Minister of Finance, Planning and Economic Development for provision of a contingency fund to cater for the aircraft fuel in case there is an attack, pesticides for control, provide for ground support equipment and support teams, and to continuously create awareness to the population in case of an invasion.
He says Uganda is working with Kenya, other nations and regional bodies to stem the spread of the pests.
Uganda is a member of the Desert Locust Control Organization for East Africa and is currently closely working and sharing information on the current status of the desert locust in the region. A technical team of two officers have been assigned to travel to Kenya, that is in the Wanji and Marsabit counties, to understand the current locust control operations, to subsequently share experiences and support the control efforts in Uganda in case of any outbreak.
Bajire says Uganda would not allow a repeat of a devastating locust invasion that happened in 1950.
The destruction was so bad. The ground was laid bare. I've talked to some old people who were young men and their children then. They talk about how they would come and leave a green ground black because they shit a lot of fecal matter, and that fecal matter makes the ground black after they have eaten everything green. So the magnitude was so bad then, and this was because there was no capability.
Komayombi Bulejea is a commissioner in Uganda's Ministry of Agriculture. He says if locust hatchings are not controlled, they can pose a high environmental threat to the region.
A single swarm can be as small as maybe 5,000 insects, but can also go up to 300, 400 million insects. And each insect eats its own weight per day. That is 2 grams per day. They actually devastate the entire country.
The Food and Agriculture Organization says the locusts have already destroyed 70,000 hectares of farmland in Somalia and Ethiopia, threatening food supplies in both countries. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Host Carol Castiel elicits reaction to the U.S. targeted killing of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and Iran's retaliation from two distinguished national security experts. Ellen Lapson, director of the Center for Security Policy Studies at George Mason University, and Mara Carlin, director of strategic studies at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.